Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on Member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 6th day of November, Anno Domini 2021, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 9 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
Ta-da.
Ta-da. Google announced earlier this year that it is planning to forcefully transition as many of its users as possible to two-factor authentication, or 2FA. The company elaborated further in October, saying it was planning to auto-enroll 150 million Google accounts in 2FA by the end of the year. Now, with just 2 months left in the year, it seems that the process has started, with some users finally being auto-enrolled in 2FA. Two-factor authentication, which Google for some odd reason calls two-step verification, or 2SV for some odd reason, requires you to use something in addition to your password to log into an account. Usually, this something is a code or confirmation prompt from a smartphone. You can also use a physical security key like a USB stick. A username and a password alone won't be good enough anymore. Google's support page details the auto-enrollment process. The company says accounts that have been flagged for 2FA will get an email or notification about 7 days before the requirement is enforced. Organizations with paid Google Workspace accounts won't be forced into 2FA. That's something for admins to decide. YouTube made 2FA a requirement for all partner-level creators, that's YouTubers with revenue sharing, on November 1st. The bottom of the support page says that for now, Google will let people auto-enrolled in 2FA shut it off, but that soon two-step verification will be required for most Google accounts. Google has way more than 150 million user accounts, but it says it is only auto-enrolling Google accounts that have the proper backup mechanisms in place to make a seamless transition to 2SV. Those backup requirements include a recovery phone number that can receive SMS codes or a recovery email. For Google accounts, a valid 2FA method is built into every Android phone via the Google Prompt feature in Google Play Services, which pops up an easy yes or no prompt when you log into a new device, saving you the hassle of typing in a code. On iOS, Google Prompt requests for your account can be received by the Google Search app, the Gmail app, or the dedicated Google Smart Lock app. A security key is also an option. Oddly, Google Authenticator is no longer a sign-up option for 2FA accounts, which was originally the whole point of the Google Authenticator. Google apparently wants everyone to use Google Prompt, SMS, or a physical key to start. Afterwards, you can go back into the 2FA settings and pick Google Authenticator. It's just a weird process. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Google forcing 2FA on all accounts. Your choices are great idea, annoying but more secure, I hate the idea, I'm okay with it, 2F what now, and of course, other. So far we have 22 votes, and the top one is annoying but more secure, followed almost immediately by I hate the idea. Well, get over yourself, basically.
Well, it's no different than folks taking the time to even back up their files. They just are too lazy, too complacent, and it isn't until something major happens to them, you know, whether their identity's stolen or, you know, the computer is breached or anything else, all of a sudden, oh, the world's on fire.
Right.
Well, and part of the problem is that...
Well, hold on. Before we get into that... after you voted at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, you can head on over to the forums, scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, the second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least the number one item under poll discussion is 6 November 21, Google forcing 2FA on all accounts. And of course, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415. Sorry, Steve, go ahead.
I'm going to say, because part of the problem is that it isn't necessarily more secure, because if you use SMS text as your second factor, that is not secure at all.
Right. Mm-mm.
And there are a lot of cases of people, it's called simjacking, where someone can call your phone company and claim to be you and get a new SIM card, and now they get all of your text messages.
Yeah.
That's happened a lot. So you really should use an authenticator, not text messaging.
Right.
But what Facebook gets is now they get everyone's cell phone number. So everyone who has resisted putting their cell phone number into Facebook, now they can get it.
Exactly right. But in this case, if you use the Google Authenticator or some other authenticator, there are a number of them.
Yeah.
That's a better option. So I'm not entirely sure why Google is not using that.
Who knows?
Who knows? Who understands
it? You know, who's applying pressure where?
Right.
You know, that's
a good point, yeah.
And the real secure thing is to get one of those sticks, the little USB.
Yeah, a USB stick would be the best. I mean, that way, you know, it can't be hacked.
Right.
So,
but those are you know, I absolutely agree that two-factor authentication is a very good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Because so many people have lousy passwords. Let's just be honest about it.
Well, even simpler, people are lazy.
People are lazy.
That's bottom line. I mean, they're too lazy to secure their accounts, to put in passwords, and I can't be bothered with that. They use the same password for multiple accounts.
Right. And then they complain.
Yeah.
Oh, I got hit. Somebody got my password. Yeah. Well.
Hello.
It is what it is.
When you don't take any time or effort, it's so hard to remember all that stuff. We've given you so many tools
right.
that can make your life easier in doing that.
Right.
There's no excuse. There is none whatsoever.
And at the very least, you know, you get a two-factor authentication set up, even if it is your SMS. Because for most people, they're not going to get... You know, nobody's going to go to that kind of trouble. But for the average person,
for now it's targeted people.
Right.
But I can see that growing easily into
anyone. Right. But for now, at least, you know, at the very least, your SMS, so that you know nobody can log in until they get that.
It's got to be worth their while. It's got to be for somebody to hack into that. I mean, you got to be, you know, I mean, Joe Blow right now, like Steve was saying, you know, it's not really a big deal.
And
down the road, maybe.
Right. And because I can't imagine anybody would want specifically my Facebook account.
Mine either.
Well, so, you know, there are so many people with lousy passwords and no two-factor authentication that it's much easier to just go get them than it is to go through all the hoop-de-loop-de to get me.
And then once they have you, they can use your account as a beachhead to... trick other people into following you. Hey, this is Nick. I had to get a new account. Follow me here.
Yeah, right.
It's just that people say the same thing about the ransomware breaches and whatnot. Oh, I've only got $10 in the bank. Doesn't matter. It's a bot doing it, so it all happens automatically, and it reports back home. Say, hey, I found $10. Okay, what's $10 I didn't have yesterday?
$10 here is better than a poke in the eye with a sharp stick.
And if they can get deeply into your account, they can take out new credit cards.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then guess who's liable for those credit cards?
Yipper.
It's very, very hard to prove that you did not sign up for this thing.
Right.
When the bad guy has your name, your social security number, your address, everything else needed to get new credit.
Right. So you want to be, you may think you're not a target. You are. Because as Steve said, 99% of these things are being run by bots. They don't care who you are.
As long as you're a warm body, a living person that they can sit there and say, oh, yeah, tie them back to this address and this phone number, they're golden.
My students used to say all the time, nobody's going to come after me. I don't have anything. You have one thing they want, the one thing they want most, which is clean credit.
Yep.
Oh, they're going to come right after you.
Even people with bad credit, you can get a $500 credit card with 30% interest.
Right.
And they take the $500 from you.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then you pay the 30%.
It's $500 more that they have in their pocket that you're now owed.
Because there's so many companies offering rebuild your credit cards.
Right, right.
With a low balance, but a high interest rate.
High interest rate.
Yeah.
And that's right. So that's one of the reasons that I've taken to using my, phone to do most of my stuff, because you get that fake, the one-time number.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right when you use it, and so I don't have to worry about, go ahead and steal that. It's no good the minute I've used it.
Yeah, if you're, 30 seconds later is invalid.
If you're in a position where you don't need to get new credit, you're not buying a new house, buying a new car, getting new credit cards, whatnot, the best thing you can do is go to the credit agencies, TransUnion, Equifax, and what's the other one, Experian, and freeze your credit. That way no one can get any new credit, not the bad guys and not you. If you do need to then sign up for some new thing, you can unfreeze it and sign up for that new thing. And they often have an auto freeze again.
Right.
So it's not just credit reporting. It's an actual freeze. And I'm going to post links for all the three credit unions.
Well, the credit
so no one can get any credit on your account.
Well, some credit cards are doing that now, too. That if you lose your credit card in that, you can put a lock on it so nobody can use it.
And a lot of it has it in the apps. The app for that credit card, so you're not, you're probably not going to lose your phone,
right?
As
often as you're
often, and so you open the app in your phone and say freeze card, and so if someone does find that card, they can't use it. One of the things I hear a lot, people who have lost their card, in fact, you know, working at a store, people will accidentally leave their card with us. That's why we're trying to have them do the chip and dip, and so we don't have to touch the card,
right?
And then they'll report their card lost and then come in and pick it back up from us when we find it. They cannot report it unlost. Once you report your credit card lost, it's canceled and they send you new cards in the mail. That may take a week.
And what
so
a
for
pain
a week,
in
without
the
without cards,
butt.
Period.
Yeah, but what a pain in the butt if you've got it signed up, you know, registered to other, you know, auto-pay certain accounts that you've forgotten, and then all of a sudden you get a notice from them, your card was declined. You pay, say, your Easy Pass.
Yep. Yeah, especially ones you only use once or twice a year.
Yeah.
You know, right. Like Easy Pass or that magazine subscription that comes up once a year.
Right. You're much more likely to forget about those, but those are equally important. And it's a good idea to have a list of all the places that your credit card is auto-paying.
I've even seen on one of my – I can't remember which one, of course. One of my cards tells me what I have set up for auto-pay.
Nice.
Because their computer can tell a manual payment versus an auto-payment.
Right.
And so they have a – that's why I have a cap. They have a list of – because they don't make the keyboard guards for the new keyboard yet.
Yeah, smart move.
The credit card computers can tell it's an auto pay, and they'll give you a list of payments reminders. So Apple has in the iTunes or music app store, even on Android, they will have a subscription list. So a lot of people will sign up for apps and subscriptions and forget they have. And so if it's an annual subscription and then suddenly, you know, there's a $99 charge on your account that you forgot. Oh, it's that thing I used for 2 months and forgot about.
Right.
Go into your subscription list and check to see what your subscriptions are and cancel ones you don't need anymore.
Right.
You know, this is where, you know, the technology is like a double-edged sword in the fact that, you know, and I'm just as guilty as the rest of the folks out there. You know, use a lot of things that they auto pay, you know, so you can have it taken right out of your account. On the other side of that sword, though, is the reason why a lot of the Postal Service stuff has slowed down.
Yep.
Because there's not the bulk of mail other than junk mail being delivered now because, oh, I don't have to buy as many stamps because now, you know, I just have like RG&E or the water bill or, you know, different things are automatically just taken right out of my account.
Right.
I'm not paying the postage and sitting there writing out checks constantly as most folks are, you know, doing. So it's kind of been a double, which ticks me off because now all of a sudden one of my subscriptions for a magazine, they're having trouble getting it to me. I haven't seen it in months. And it's like, where is it?
Yep. Although a friend of mine passed away several years ago, and I was ended up being executor of the estate because they didn't have one. So we had a lot of their mail forwarded to us so we could catch up with everything and whatnot. She's been gone 5 years now, I think, and we still get magazines in her name.
Yeah.
That my wife will read and doesn't have to pay for. here's a free sample of this magazine. And then, you know, you hope they're going to sign up for it, but you know, she's gone. Her credit cards are closed, and yeah, you can't charge it anyway.
Pretty much not happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you, so people, pay attention. Even if you only have $30 in the bank, they'll take that $30. And then that's the $30 you don't have anymore. So be aware, be careful, check. I check twice a day.
And it can take weeks to get it back after you report it.
If you get it back.
If you get it back.
You know, I do have a thing on my account where they'll call me if there's an unusual.
Yes, I love that. I love my checking account.
Around Christmas time, when you start making unusual purchases, 1 year, they let the $500 purchase go through, but they called me for the $50 purchase. Okay, it's nice you're doing that, but I wish it had been the other way around.
Yeah, exactly.
They were both legitimate, but I wish it had been the other way around.
I also get notices. My wife had some dental work done, which was not cheap. And I did get a notice that this charge had been made. And you have, you know, whatever, 48 hours or whatever to say no, but otherwise it'll go through, which was nice. Then I could just say, okay, knock yourself out. But you don't realize how easy it is for someone to steal your money, frankly. Yep. You wouldn't leave, you know, $1,000 sitting on your front porch. Why would you leave $1,000 in an unprotected account? These days, it's the same thing.
Yeah. And it doesn't take much. I mean, they can get in there and, you know, root around and hack into your account and find out so much information about you that, like Steve was saying before, you might think, oh, I'm not worth it. As long as you're a warm, living body and you've got, whether it's poor credit or not, they can just run with all that information, set it up, leave you so deep in the hole, and then move on to the next one.
Exactly.
They've already
right.
made, you know, so they only make $500 on two different credit cards. Boom, that's $500 ahead, you know, for times two that they're ahead, and you're in the hole for it. And they can do that upon thousands of people.
And if you can afford to lose $500, you know what? God bless you. But for the rest of us, we should protect ourselves as much as possible. That's not to say you can't get hit, even if you're protected.
Well, that brings a point, because right now we're just starting to get into it. I mean, we're already seeing the inundation of the Christmas ads and everything else.
Yep.
The scammers are going to be out full force this year. I can guarantee it, due to the, you know, the times that we are in right now, and you know, things might not be always that great for folks. Be very cautious, because if it smells too good to be true, it probably is.
Yep.
Always, you know, if you have to think twice about opening an email or responding to a phone call, hang up or delete the email.
And you don't have to tell them they got the wrong person. They got the right person.
They got the right person. And listen, let me tell you in my personal experience. I got a thing the other day that said there was a problem with my Amazon purchase. Yep. I make Amazon purchases.
Mm-hmm.
It said, click here to resolve it. So I looked at that link, and I saw that it did not go to Amazon. That's an immediate notice that, you know, but it looked in the email like it was going to Amazon. On the other hand, just to double check, I went to Amazon directly myself, not through the email. I went to Amazon and looked up my account, and everything was fine. Thank you very much.
Yep.
So I knew it was a scam, so I just deleted it. So when you get an email that says there's a problem with some account, go directly to that account, not by clicking on the email, but by going to it directly, the bank or the Amazon or whatever store it is, and check with them directly. And believe me, they will tell you if there's a problem. They do not hide that from you. So when you go, you'll know if it's a problem. Go look at your account, check your account, and see whether or not there's a problem. If there's not, then just delete the email. It's a scam.
And one thing I can guarantee, folks, guarantee you, one, the IRS, the U.S. government,
yeah,
and them will not call you or Microsoft to tell you that there's an issue.
Right.
You will get letters in the mail. They do everything officially, and it'll be through the mail, folks. Somebody calling you, telling you that there's a problem with your IRS or your Social Security or any of those others, hang up.
We're used to junk mail and ignoring junk mail.
Right.
Postal mail, but we're not quite to the point where we don't trust email or phone calls.
Right.
And it's hard to say, but yeah, you can't trust the email coming from Amazon saying there's a problem because it probably didn't come from Amazon.
It's exactly right. All right. We are going to take a quick break. If you're on the line, please stay on the line. We'll get to you when we come back. For the rest of you, why aren't you on the line? Give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
And we remember the 21st of September, because that's that song.
Yeah, right.
But then we also remember the 5th of November, which was yesterday. So
right. Remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder treason and plot.
It's not quite happy Guy Fawkes Day, is it?
No, it really kind of isn't. Well, it depends on which side you are on.
They caught him, so you're happy, but if you're on the other side, you're not happy.
Not happy, exactly. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is James from Rochester, New York. Hi, James, what's up?
Oh, I have a question for you. When I go to some websites and they have like a little video you can play, the volume slider on some websites works, you know, it goes up and down or sideways. On others, if you go to move it, it doesn't move. It will, like, just go off. Sometimes it doesn't work. Have you ever seen that before?
Yeah, it's fairly common. It depends on what software they're using at the other end.
Oh.
Unfortunately, there's nothing you can do about it. That's just... You know, there's lots and lots of different packages that people can use to do on-site video, and some of them have, depending on what version of operating system you're running, et cetera, can either work really well or not so well.
Yeah, it's more annoying than anything else, the fact that some of them, you know, how you want to lower it a little bit or whatever.
Right. I'm afraid there's not much you can do about it.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Oh, you've seen that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. On the secondary, I'll go down to the bottom where the main volume control for my laptop is, and I lower it.
Yeah, you have to do it there.
It's more annoying.
I've seen it just the other way, too. I've seen them that they're so low, I try to crank my volume up so I can even hear it.
And you still can't hear it.
So. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, so it goes both ways.
Yeah.
Depending on their setting. Well, thank you so much.
Yep.
Thank you. Have fun, James.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, don't forget, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Because I've even run into problems where you're playing a YouTube video and you mute it.
Yeah.
And then a couple hours later, you're playing a different YouTube video and it's still muted.
Yep.
It's kind of nice that it remembers, but it's really annoying that it remembers.
Yeah. All right, thanks. Who have we get? Oh, it's already potted up. All right, our next caller is Fred from Rochester, New York. Hi, Fred. What's up?
Hey, I got a couple questions for you. I did, mostly on your recommendation, invest in getting the full boat end pass.
Nice.
And they do have a mobile device, which I haven't gotten quite set up yet, but you can download it to a flash drive and use it on any computer.
Yep.
Which helps me out if I'm moving around in certain accounts and but mostly I got it on my phone. So I'm trying to learn to use that first. And I'm looking, I kind of like belt and suspenders kind of guy. I want to see it. I go to my Google Drive. I see backups. I see the dates. I don't see NPass. I don't know where that vault's gone.
Well, that's a very good question. I think it's in its own folder. Hold on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it has its own folder called, okay, shockingly enough, NPass.
NPass, yeah.
Okay, because when I go to backups,
No, it's not in backups. It's right in the top level at my drive.
Oh, okay.
There's an NPass folder. And inside that, you'll see your NPass. I think they call it a wallet. Yeah, there it is. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then I can access that with the flash drive and use the same vault, correct?
Yep. Yeah, anywhere that you want, as long as you log in with the same username and password, it'll take a look at your settings and pick up wherever you've put NPass.
Because I was originally going to start with... Didn't know what I was doing. I was going to start. I started with a flash drive and was going to use the flash drive as the vault.
Right.
And then I realized, well, that doesn't work for my phone.
Right.
So I'm in the process and putting in a lot of almost every store you go to online wants you to log in.
Yep.
Those all have the other thing I'm seeing, and I don't know if there's a setting for it. Certain stores, if they use a little bit different, maybe it's the wording that they use, it doesn't fill in the username, and it's usually my email address.
Right.
I have to hard enter that.
Right. And unfortunately, there's no way around that. It depends. Okay. Even NPass isn't perfect.
Yeah. You could report that site to NPass so they can see what's going wrong and add it to the code.
Right.
Yeah, they can always enhance it. They're always looking to enhance their product, and a customer feedback is one good way of doing it.
So I'm trying out some apps on my phone, and I look at them and I don't like them. They're not, you know, some of the stuff that already on my phone works just as good, if not better, than the stuff that I'm looking at. Downloading and deleting those. Do I need a cleaner? We talked about Revo uninstaller for PCs. Is there There's a cleaner with the Avast.
Yeah. Are you talking about for your phone?
Yeah.
Yeah. No. The reason you need Revo uninstaller is because Windows has the registry.
Yeah, the registry.
Right.
And
not in Android.
Not in anything else.
Oh. Okay.
With most other products, with Macs and with Linux and with iOS and Android, all programs have their own discrete little file called a config file.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they keep all their data. So when you delete the program, it also deletes the config file. Only Windows throws all its eggs in one very fragile basket.
Yeah. Well, I used to think, you know, for decades that, you know, Windows was the best that we could possibly hope for and didn't venture out and try other stuff because, well, it's kind of sort of working and I'll probably have the same problems in other places. But the more I'm completely divesting of Windows, Microsoft, anything.
Well, good for you.
That just tickles me to death. I've been able to do that after all this time. So I don't need to worry about cleaning.
Nope.
What's interesting, though, is that there are cleaning programs available for Android.
Avast has that.
Yeah, including some from the big companies. I don't know what they can do.
Yeah, them.
Well, they delete some temp files. I went with the
OS does that itself.
The security tango.
Yeah.
And, you have the Avast is the recommended go-to. They have that. They have a paid subscription, and they have also a cleaner that's a little bit extra. So, well, you know, for a few bucks a month that it comes out to be.
Yep.
I figured I, at least in the beginning, while I'm really heavy into trying and opening and closing apps and all different kind of stuff to the point where my phone starts to slow down, I have to clear stuff out.
Right.
On the two-factor authentication, now Google is going through that, but my bank doesn't if I'm using the same device. If I switch devices, if I go to your house, use your computer, it wants to know, hey, is this really you?
Yeah, right.
But they don't have, Google's got an app for that, for Google.
Yep.
Yeah, there's several third-party authenticators, but a lot of banks don't use them. My bank doesn't either. They send an email, which is also not secure.
Right.
Yeah. I think I do have that option, email or
text, yeah.
Right.
Or text. And I previously had a question, I think I might have figured it out myself, was on the on using the web page versus an app. I think that the app is faster.
Often.
And it's got a little bit better navigation.
Usually.
So.
And quite frequently, the authenticator apps on your phone can use your phone's authentication system, the face ID or the fingerprint ID.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't even need to open the app. It will say, touch the touch ID to log in to XYZ website.
Right.
And those are really nice, the websites that have implemented that.
Yeah, they're few and far between, but they're very nice.
Yeah.
All right, Fred, we kind of have to move on.
Yep, move on. Thank you so much, and keep up the good work.
Thanks, Fred. We appreciate it.
Bye.
Yeah, whatever format you're going to use for authentication is better than no two-factor authentication, there are some that are more secure than others. So, I always appreciate when any two-factor authentication is used, but you're right. I would rather be able to use the Google Authenticator or I can, in many apps, I can just press the fingerprint reader on my phone. That's sort of fair.
Apple has the same thing on their side too.
Right.
Apple just started a new thing. If you're using an Apple email address, they have a new Hide My Mail function.
Oh, nice.
Where they will make up a fake email address when you want to sign up for something, and then if that website sends something to that fake address, Apple will forward it to your real address.
Nice.
So you don't have to give all these websites your real email address that then gets leaked.
But you still get all the spam.
Right.
Oops.
But but you don't have to give them your real address.
Right. I often, for some places, I use something like Mailinator.
Yeah. Make up your own.
Make up any address you want. Get the little bit of information they send you and then never look at it again.
I wonder if I can find it. There's an email service that only lasts for an hour.
Oh, nice.
So you create an address to receive that code to sign up for a service, and then the address disappears.
Nice.
So you never get any more mail there.
Right.
But you've signed up for the service you wanted.
Right. Mm-hmm. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim from Brighton, New York. Hi, Jim. What's up?
Hi. I bought a computer, and it came with a...
Hello?
Hi. Hi, I'm getting an echo here, but let's proceed anyway.
Are you getting the echo through your phone, or do you have your radio on?
Well, actually, I thought it was coming out of my phone, but I don't have any radio going.
Okay,
on.
Then it's probably something to do with your phone circuits. So go ahead.
Okay. I bought a computer. It came with a McAfee multi-address access, program on it, and you got it for like a cent. Well, I never really wanted to use it, but when I went to take it off my computer, it won't go away.
Right.
It's almost like a virus that you can't get a hold of.
Right.
Do you have any suggestions as to how I can get this thing off my computer?
Revo uninstaller.
Maybe. It depends entirely on what computer you have and how they've got things in. What happens is companies nowadays are simply not making enough money off of you. So they make deals with places like McAfee to put their software on your machine. And in some cases, they are not uninstallable. They are registered as part of the operating system. And therefore, something like Revo Uninstaller will not uninstall it because it thinks it's part of the operating system. You may be able to uninstall it. It certainly can't hurt to try, because if you can't, you can't. But so
I have tried Revo, and like you say, it didn't work.
Right.
I've also gone into the registry and removed everything that had McAfee in it, and that didn't work either.
It looks like McAfee has a consumer product removal tool for devices that had it pre-installed. I'll post a link to that. So the Windows uninstall doesn't work. The McAfee uninstall doesn't work. They have another tool.
Right, that may work.
That may work, yeah.
Well, yeah, they have it on there, so in case your install gets corrupted.
Right.
They've had that on there for eons, a tool that, yeah, you could, in case the install got hacked or whatever, you could do a clean uninstall and then a clean install.
Because what often happens with those bundled antivirus programs is they only run for 3 months. And then you're supposed to pay to keep them running, and people don't realize that, and suddenly they're not protected anymore.
Right.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, that uninstall program you'd have to contact McAfee to get a hold of?
It's on their website, and I've put a link to it on our website.
Okay. Thanks very much, fellas.
Yep. Thanks. Have fun, Jim.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I just read that Symantec bought AVG. No, just bought Avira.
Right.
They already bought AVG, who bought Avast. So now Symantec owns everybody.
Pretty much.
Pretty much. Which is probably a big reason not to use them.
Yeah, exactly.
So McAfee's still owned by IBM, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And, okay, thank you. One of the news items we may not get to is that Windows Defender is getting a big overhaul. And Windows Defender is not as bad as it used to be. And hopefully the overhaul will make it even better. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dan from Webster, New York. Hi, Dan, what's up?
Hey, gentlemen. I am getting to be one of the lucky people. I'm getting green light later on this year.
Congrats.
Yeah. Now, here's the issue. I currently have Spectrum, and they have my old telephone number.
Uh-huh.
And I want to move it to another company, maybe Google, maybe somebody else. But what's the process?
It's called number porting.
Right.
And you call them up and Spectrum and tell them you want to release your number for porting. And then you pick your new company, and you tell them the number that you want to be ported.
I think you want to do it in the other. I think you want to do it the other way around.
Well, Spectrum has to release it first.
Yeah, but you tell the way I've always done it is I call the new company and say I'm about to release my number for porting.
Yeah, that could be. It depends on how long they make it releasable before they grab it back.
Right. So the best thing to do is to talk to the folks at Spectrum about how to port your number away.
Mm-hmm.
And then go through their retention process of where they want to keep you.
Right.
Just say green light and they'll go, oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly. then you want to go to whatever new company. First, pick your new company. That's the first thing to do.
Right.
Whoever you're going to do your phone through. And then talk to them about the porting process and before you call Spectrum.
They might be able to help and make it a little less tedious.
Right. Yeah, so there's no reason for me to get I've heard you have to get a temporary a burner phone and port the number over there.
If you're using Google Voice, that has to be tied to a working cell phone first.
Right.
But if you're using Google Fi, that's its own cell phone service.
Okay.
Right. So you really want to figure out what service you want to go to first.
Right now, I kind of like the adorable Ryan Reynolds and his cell phone company.
Yes, Mint Mobile. Yeah.
$15 a month? That's hard to beat.
It is hard to beat.
But my wife got Consumer Cellular because they had a deal for AARP members.
Right.
And she's paying $25 a month. And the other one is less than...
Yeah.
No deal needed.
Right.
Try that one and port your number.
At any rate, the best thing to do is to figure out who you're going to port to and talk to them about porting your number.
Okay. Sounds great.
Okie doke. Thanks, Dan.
Hey. Thank you, gentlemen.
Bye-bye.
The FCC did make a mandate that companies must release your phone number to be ported.
Right. So if you start getting flack about it, remind them that it's the law of the land. They have to do this.
Yep. They can charge a fee. So the FCC doesn't prevent a fee.
Right.
But most of the companies don't charge a fee.
Right. Right. Okay. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. How are you?
Peachy, how are you?
Good, good. I'm still working on my new install of the new iMac.
Yep.
And I used to have Google Sync, I think.
It changed the name.
Yes, changed the name now to Google Drive. And my question is, as I'm doing this, I've got a little warning sign that said Mac HD will no longer be synced to Google Drive or backed up. To continue syncing folders on this device connected to your computer, is that something I want to do, or maybe I just never understood what I was doing in the first place?
Well, it's a little confusing because it used to be Google Sync, and then it went to Google Backup and Sync, and then now Google Drive. You sync to your Google Drive. It used to be Google Drive was just a folder you copied stuff into.
Right,
so it
right.
sounds like you've got the old version still installed and copied from the previous computer. And you have to uninstall that first, and then it warns you it's going to stop syncing because you're removing the program. Then you install the new version and start syncing again. And you can pick what you want to sync, whether just the Google folder or your entire computer.
And assuming you've got space.
Well, and yeah, that's the next step is you have to pay for space. Google only gives you 15 gigabytes free, shared between your mail and your files.
Right.
And you can buy more space if you need to.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you can get those messages, and they're a little scary because it is going to stop syncing when the old program goes away, and then it will start syncing again when the new program gets there.
Okay. But if I open it up, I should still have all of my other stuff
right.
that I've put on it over the years.
Yeah. And just
and I think I still have lots of space, I think.
Yeah, those things don't go away. You but just stop syncing them.
Syncing the good. They're still on your computer, but they won't.
And they're also still in Google Drive.
Right. But they stop syncing, so anything you change before
or
you put
add.
A new version in. Yeah.
Right.
Just to be safe, do a backup of the new computer.
I'm backing up regularly.
Yep. Just
good.
In case. Yep.
Okay, I'm going to push the button.
There you go. Have fun.
Uh-huh. Thank you. Bye-bye.
For sure. Boldly going where he's not sure he wants to go.
Yeah. See, now that Google is charging, I've got to decide if I'm going to buy extra space on Google or buy extra space on Apple. And since I'm primarily Apple, it's probably going to be Apple.
Probably.
Although I like Google's web interface to your photos better than Apple's.
Right. And because I'm an Amazon Prime person, I'm also syncing all my stuff to Amazon Prime.
I got stuck on that one. It syncs your photos.
Right. That's all I wanted.
But I have videos in my photo library that I shot with my still camera.
Okay.
So like your still camera can do videos and your video camera can do stills.
Right.
So the Amazon photo syncing program got to one of those videos and stopped.
Interesting.
And it won't continue and won't pick up where it left off. To do the rest of the still photos. I have to make a separate photo library with only stills, as near as I can tell.
I see. Or move your photos out.
Yeah, move all
the videos
out. Move all the videos out, yeah. Which is annoying as well.
Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tim from Macedon, New York. Hiya, Tim, what's up?
Hey, guys. Long-time listener.
Good for you.
First-time caller. You were talking about spam accounts earlier.
Yeah.
One of the ones that I'd like to recommend would be Spam Gourmet.
Spam Gourmet.
Ooh.
Yeah. That is disposable addresses. You can tell it, send it to this. It'll forward to your account. And you get to allow it X number of times the email will be forwarded. And then the rest of the time afterwards, it's gobbled up.
Nice.
Very good.
Very nice.
Cool.
Spam Gourmet.
That's where a lot of spam comes from, is every time you have to give your email address to some company you're logging into to buy one thing one time ever.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you can set it to like 5 times, and it'll forward to that account 5 times, and the 6th time, it's gobbled up.
Nice.
Cool.
Very cool.
Cool. Thank you.
All right, guys. I appreciate it. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Yeah, it's true. There's a lot of places that you can get a good anti-spam email address. It's just a matter of finding one and picking it. Archandra did say that when we were talking earlier about the registry, he said there is gconf, configuration program in Linux, which is very much like the registry. And that's true, but not everything uses gconf. And it rarely gets anywhere near the... I've seen registries that were 2 gigabytes in size. I've certainly never seen gconf get that big. But, I still prefer the way that most Linux programs do it, which is they have their own configuration program in /etc, the etc folder. And... when you remove the program, you remove that as well, and it all works off better that way. All right, that music tells us we are done for the first hour, but ho-ho, don't go away. There's a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way. Holy crow, that must mean it's Soundbite. And it is, and that must mean you'll have more of Dave Enright, more of Steve Ray, way too much of Nick Francesco, and, of course, all of your phone calls. Give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And we will be back with a whole lot more sound bites. So take a quick bio break, but don't go too far. Come on back and join us on the longest-running computer show. On the truly great and truly grateful to you, because we are, once again, for the next 6 months, member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Fred from Rochester back on the line. What's up, Fred?
Hey, I'm still not finding the folder that the NPass is backing up to or using as a vault.
Okay. So are you, in fact, do you have NPass set up to back up to your Google Drive?
Well, I got save to, and it says drive.
Does it say Google Drive, or does it just say some drive?
It's got the Google symbol, and it says drive, and it's got my email address.
Okay. Then at your Google Drive, right at the top level, somewhere in that list should be a folder called NPass.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it. I went from the top level.
Unless you renamed it. And in that... dialogue where you're picking the folder, what is it? Does it have a place to give a name of that backup file?
I got to go back to it. No, it doesn't. It just says drive.
All right. In the search bar on Google Drive, you should, if you type Wallet X, all one word, WALLETX.
Okay.
And hit enter, you'll see a bunch of things. One will be sync_default.walletx. That is the NPass wallet.
Okay.
And you're sure it's Google Drive and not OneDrive or Box Drive or
no, Google
Drop
Drive?
Or,
right okay. now. So. And it's got the same Google symbol that I use when I go to that
Okay.
The triangle.
Got nothing called Wallet X, nothing called Wallet. The only thing I have that's called NPass, I have a copy of my invoice, a PDF of the invoice when I purchased.
Well, either has you're the, not syncing.
Or yeah. Has the backup completed yet?
It says last synchronized a few seconds ago.
You know what? I don't know what to tell you.
Try searching the main drive.
I don't run the program
for that wallet file. Maybe it is on the main drive.
Well, I say if he types Wallet X into the search bar,
yeah, that's right.
And hit enter, Wallet X, all one word,
into the computer search bar or into the Google Drive
search bar.
Right. So I'd use the computer search bar, see if it's on the local computer.
But then he wouldn't be able to get it on his phone.
I think that's the problem, isn't it? You can't get it on your phone.
It's working on my phone. It worked. I don't know where it's, but I want to see where it's being saved.
I understand that, and I'm telling you unless you have changed where it goes to a folder called NPass at the root level of your Google Drive. And the file in it is by default called sync_default.walletx. And unless you've changed that, it has to be there or you're not syncing to Google Drive. Honestly, those are the only two choices. There's no magic here.
Could it be hidden?
Nope.
Google Drive doesn't do hidden folders,
right.
Does it?
Nope.
Or if it's there, I'm just not. Because I looked by time. I looked by name. I looked in the other folders.
Did you search in the search bar for Wallet X?
For Wallet X, for NPass, for Wallet, without the X.
Then I honestly do not know what to tell you. If you're syncing to Google Drive, it has to be there. Are you logged in as the same person that is logged in via Google Drive?
Yep.
Via NPass?
Yep, says synchronize Google Drive.
No.
My name and my email.
Okay. And you're logged in as the same person on Google Drive itself?
Yep, that's the only account I have.
Honestly, I have no idea what to tell you because there's no... Unless you change the name and the destination, it has to sync there.
That's one of those we'd have to see.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I can't give you any more information because, honestly, there just simply isn't any.
Okay.
I've posted a link to the NPass user manual on the syncing chapter. Maybe you'll find something in there.
Okay. I'll go right there now. All right.
Yeah, sorry.
Thanks.
All right, bye-bye.
It does support a bunch of different cloud services, but if it says Google Drive when he's logging in, it's...
It's Google Drive.
It's Google Drive, yeah.
I'm sorry. I wish I had better information for you, but there's no third alternative, I'm afraid. It's just the way it works. I searched my drive, and it's folders called NPass, file called sync_default.walletx. I don't know what else to tell you. I'm sorry.
It's hiding.
It's hiding somewhere. Somewhere. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jane from Rochester, New York. What's up, Jane?
So I'm going to buy a new laptop, and a lot of the ones that have Windows 10 installed on them are reduced in price.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. There are some new ones with Windows 11 installed on them at regular price. So... Is there a preference as to whether to buy the Windows 10 and get the free upgrade or to get the one that already has Windows 11 on it?
Well, you may find that a number of the laptops that are reduced in price will not run Windows 11, and that's why they're reduced in price.
Or they won't run it well.
Right.
So, if you intend to go to Windows 11, and I would buy one pre-installed because you're pretty sure it'll work.
Right.
Well, thank you very much.
Now, Jane, when you buy a laptop, Windows 11 minimum requirement is 4 gig of RAM, so you really want 8.
Okay, most of the ones I'm looking at do have at least 8.
Good. At least 8. Good.
The other issue you can sometimes run into is if you have any older programs that you're running, it may not work with Windows 11, and you may have to upgrade your program too. So it's something a lot of people don't realize when they buy their new computer. Suddenly, right. I've got to buy a new version of Microsoft Office. I have to buy a new version of this, new version of that.
Yes. No, I'll keep my eye on that. Thank you.
Thanks, Jane. Good luck.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Yep. Microsoft does have a program. Well, is it available?
It's available again.
That will scan your current computer and tell you if that computer can run Windows 11 and what programs won't. I think we did have a link to that before, and Microsoft took it down, and then Microsoft brought it back.
Yeah. So, yeah. And in fact, they're going to be force installing that. Let me read that.
That'd be a good segue.
Very nice. AdDuplex, the largest cross-promotion network for Windows Store apps and games, surveyed around 60,000 systems running either Windows 10 or 11. Following the October release, the study showed the latest Windows revamp had reached 4.8% of modern PCs, 4.8%. Windows insiders running beta versions of Windows 11 accounted for the remaining 0.3% of the user base, thus driving the overall figure to 5.1%. The survey also shows that most systems that are still running older versions of Windows, 37.6% are running Windows 10 21H1. 20.H2 is installed on 34% of systems. Overall, over 90% of Windows 10 and 11 PCs are now on 2020 or 2021 versions of the operating system. Aiding the adoption rate of Windows 11 is Microsoft's recent rollout of the operating system to older devices. They predominantly offered the initial launch to newer PCs last month. Additionally, Microsoft has begun force installing the PC Health Check application on devices with Windows 10. The tool assesses if a system is eligible to upgrade to Windows 11, but users have reported their computers reinstalling the app despite them having uninstalled it several times. In any case, the upcoming 21H2 version of Windows 10 that releases this month should give us a better idea of how many users are willing to migrate to Windows 11. With the adoption rate for Windows 11, while the adoption rate for Windows 11 is gaining some momentum, controversial system requirements may ultimately have an impact that progress on that progress moving forward. In particular, Microsoft's decision to integrate the need for TPM 2.0 has been met with a harsh reception. However, users can bypass it in a few minutes. And when there's a will, there's a way. An enthusiast recently managed to run Windows 11 on a single-core Intel Pentium 4 chip from 15 years ago. I'm sure they measure response time with a calendar, but
yeah, really.
Still.
Is it in a freezer to keep it cool enough?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, are you pining for Windows 11? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And you will find that, in fact, Microsoft is going to start force feeding you that Windows Health Check, Windows upgrade. They call it a health check. It's basically to see whether or not your machine will take Windows 11.
And then they can force Windows 11 onto you, maybe.
That's what they want to do.
So I was thinking Steve Gibson had that Never 10 software to stop Windows 10 from loading on. Maybe he'll have to upgrade it to Never 11.
Never 11. Mm-hmm. But we'll go back to the phones and talk to Richard from Irondequoit. What's up, Richard?
Hello. Two-part question. Recently got my credit card statement totaling $70 broken down by TotalAV.com. Antivirus, unlimited devices, and password vaults. Have you ever heard of TotalAV? It's computer protection, I guess. Are they legit?
Well, let me ask you this. Did you actually order it?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, yeah, okay, then.
Forgot about that back in October.
Okay. Yeah. And if...
So the free trial ran out, and they charged your credit card.
Yep, that's how it works. Yeah. It is a legit site, Web of Trust. Gives it a 2.5 out of 5 stars. So,
yeah. Oh, okay.
So it's legitimate, but maybe not that good.
Yeah,
not that good. A couple people think it's
but
a scam.
It is free.
Just got a pop-up that says my antivirus protection expired, and here I got a $70 bill in front of me, so I'm going to call them.
You have to log into your account so that the new subscription data can get downloaded probably.
Say that once more?
You have to log into your TotalAV account on the computer so that it can download the new subscription data into the program.
Oh, okay. Second part, VPN. What is VPN?
ZPM?
VPN.
Virtual Private Network.
Yeah.
VPN.
It's basically a way of connecting two networks together over the public internet. with a secure tunnel, we often say it. What VPNs are typically used for is you're working from home and you have your computer connect to the VPN at your office, so it thinks your computer thinks it's at the office, and you can see all your office file servers and printers and whatnot. Some people mistakenly think a VPN is makes you private on the internet, and it doesn't. It moves the exposure from your internet service provider to your VPN service provider. So say you have Spectrum Internet. Spectrum Internet knows everywhere you go on the internet because they're taking you there. You sign up for a VPN service, so then Spectrum sends you to the VPN service. Then the VPN service takes you to the internet, and they know everywhere you've went on the internet because they're taking you there.
Oh, dear. Okay, I have the three initials wrong. There seems to be a new three-initial protection. I'll say the word protection. That seems to be for, they want to sell you. Many sources online want to sell you this protection that is three letters. VPN probably isn't it, but
it might be because NordVPN will sell it to you. There's 50 companies that want to sell you a VPN.
Most of the AV companies have a VPN version as well.
Okay. All righty, then. That must be it. And it's not something a little citizen like myself would need.
Generally, you know what? No. Here's the thing. A lot of people say, oh, well, I need a VPN because it's virtual private network. Well, it is virtual. And it is a network, but it's not tremendously private.
Private, yeah.
If you trust the company that's at the other end, then what's happening is, as Steve said, instead of Spectrum or Frontier or Greenlight knowing where you're going, I'm not saying that they check or they. I'm just saying that it's going through their machines.
And
it now goes through the VPN company's machines. So who do you trust is where you end up. And it doesn't make it more private. You know, they say, well, if you're going to work in a coffee shop, you have to have a VPN. No, you have to have an encrypted connection, which 99% of the internet is these days. If you can look up in the address bar and see a lock that is locked, you have a private encrypted connection. What? And it doesn't matter whether it's to Google or to Microsoft or to a VPN, it's still a private encrypted connection.
And what happens is that the free and too cheap VPN services take your data of where you go on the internet and sell that.
Yes.
And that's how they make their money. That's why the service is free, because they sell your data.
Got it.
There are a couple of VPN services we hear about that that are a little safer. They only do VPNs in RAM, so that is when you shut down your VPN, it's gone.
Right.
And if
they don't keep records.
And they don't keep records. So if an agency comes and grabs the computer, none of your data is on it. They're not free. They're not that expensive either. $8 to $10 a month. But most people don't need that. The typical use for a VPN is to connect to your company so you can access your company's printers and file servers.
Commercial.
Right.
Yeah.
Commercial people.
Actually,
a few minutes ago a man said he was going to switch to Greenlight, and then he said he had to change his telephone service. Why, if he was on Greenlight, which is just internet, why would he need to change his telephone service?
Because he had his phone through Spectrum, and he's giving up all of Spectrum. So if he keeps his landline, he has to move it somewhere else.
You can theoretically keep Spectrum phone and move to Greenlight Internet.
Right.
Or Spectrum TV and Greenlight Internet. That's what I have.
That's what I have.
Yeah.
It's technologically impossible or
no.
morally impossible?
Well, Spectrum offers three services.
Yeah,
and so you can keep one of the services from Spectrum and use a different company for another service.
What they want to do is bundle everything, right. But you don't save that much money.
Yeah,
okay.
And their phone service is $10 a month on the deals that they offer you.
So
it's not too bad, and often even that would be cheaper than the $15 a month Mint SIM.
Right.
But that's a hard landline. Most people are moving their landlines to cell phones and giving up landlines completely.
Correct.
But you can port your phone number to your cell phone, so the number that used to be your house landline, now rings your cell phone.
Right.
Well, I can do that.
Yeah.
You can and just pay Consumer Cellular, for instance.
You can put if you already have a cell phone number, it gets tricky because you have to give up one of them. But you can move a phone number to a new service. So you can give up your Spectrum landline and move that to a cell phone service. Move that phone number to a cell phone service.
But not on the same phone you already have.
Unless your phone has two SIMs. Some of them do. There are some phones that can have two phone numbers.
So someone could dial my landline number and my cell phone would ring?
Yes.
Yep.
Does that cost me extra money?
Yes.
It doesn't have to. I know when we ported our Spectrum number, it did not cost us any money to port our Spectrum number to Consumer Cellular.
But you're still paying Consumer Cellular.
Right, we're paying Consumer Cellular for the service.
Number. Right.
And they just moved the number to it.
And I could get rid of my hardware.
Yeah, talk to the folks at Consumer Cellular about how to do that.
One of the big advantages of a landline back in the real landline days with Frontier is that the phone system is powered by the phone system. So when your power in your house goes out, your telephone still works because it's powered by that phone line.
Yes.
Now that we've moved to the VoIP solutions like Spectrum and Vonage and all the other ones, if the power goes out, your phone is gone anyway. So you don't have that backup of having your telephone still work. But now so many people have cell phones. Your cell phone will keep working until it runs out of power.
Or the cell tower's battery.
Unless the power outage is big enough to take the tower out, too.
Okay. That's good advice. Thank you so much for that one.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
There's also the fact, of course, that if you've got some sort of security system into your landline, then you really want to keep the landline for that.
Yeah, they often want to have a wired line, although there are some of them that work with cell phones. We our office got robbed a couple years ago, and the first thing the robber did was pull the meter box, electric meter, off the wall,
right?
Which killed power, which killed the alarm system. And so we asked the alarm company, why didn't you call the police when the power died? And it's because the power died. That didn't mean someone broke into your place. So how do we keep the alarm working when the power is dead? Well, you put a UPS backup battery on the alarm system and you get a cell phone for your alarm system.
Right.
So now we have just a single cell phone for the alarm system.
Right.
In the office on a UPS.
Yep. Yep. That's how it That's works. Crazy. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Rich from Irondequoit, New York. What's up?
Hello, guys. Good afternoon. I'm going to try to explain myself hopefully correctly. We have about 30 employees signing on to different computers within two buildings at our place. They want to put in two feature authentication things on every computer with like a finger drive or
your finger
over. Yeah. And is that a good idea, or is that something that's feasible, I guess?
Yeah, a lot of laptops especially, and some desktops too, are coming with fingerprint readers built in already. Theoretically, the fingerprint reader is more secure than a password that you probably have on a Post-it note sitting next to the computer.
or under the keyboard.
Yeah, and if you work in most companies, even if they're not a security conscious company, they have their own company private data that they want to keep secure.
Right.
And so a lot of companies are starting to do it. And especially with the work from home, when you're not in the office behind the office firewall, having that extra secure login option is often very common.
Yeah. Well, you saying about keeping files secure, I thought that happens more within Windows and securing each individual to use what folder versus then, I wipe my finger over the computer and now I'm in.
Yeah, that's how it works. It unlocks the computer so that you can get into all the files on the computer.
Right.
Well, you can get into all files in your user account. Each user can have their own password and their own fingerprint.
Correct, but then the files beyond that to what I can get into would be secured by the administrator of the system.
Yes, but the reason that you want a fingerprint reader is because that proves you're you. So if somebody stole your username and password, unless they also steal your finger, now we're getting gruesome, they can't get into your account. That's the point behind two-factor authentication. They have to have both factors to break into your account.
Yeah, you're using because your password and your cell phone to get that code.
Because like they were saying, though, you know, you're allowed to only go into your folders. But say you go over to the next desk and your friend there is logged in and they're in accounting. You could, and they're logged in, you could easily, you know, go in there and steal their, you know, any information.
But
that
if it's locked, you have to have their fingerprint.
Yep.
Yeah, well, that's another problem with people locking or signing out of the computers also.
Yep.
That's a whole other issue.
That's a whole other.
Well, the system administrator can set rules for that.
Time
so
limit.
If you're idle for, I've been to banks where the idle timeout is 1 minute.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Which is annoying.
It is annoying, but they're a bank.
And that's money.
It's up to walk away. Yeah, you don't want someone to be able to log in and transfer.
Right.
Maybe that might be a better suggestion is to have them do that where it logs you out after not using it for, say, 10 minutes or something like that.
Or at least lock the screen. Yeah.
Right.
Well, yeah, lock the screen. Yeah.
What happens then is people write their password down on a Post-it note so that they can
and get tape it to the monitor.
Yeah.
But again, if you've got two-factor authentication, they still then have to have your finger to get in.
Yep. Okay. That's better.
All right. Just thanks for the information. Sounds good. Yep.
Thanks, Rich.
Okay, have a good day.
You too. Yeah, there's a million ways to properly secure a network, and there are about 6 million ways to improper.
Yeah. Everyone on the new Mac laptops that came out, they put a better camera in it, but people wondered why they didn't put Face ID in. It still has fingerprint ID. And somebody apparently got an interview with someone at Apple, and it says, well, because your fingers are already on the keyboard, and it's easy just to touch the fingerprint reader. But my
face is in front of the camera.
So the fear is that you unlock it accidentally too quickly. Putting your finger on the touch reader is an overt act.
Right.
Looking at the screen, unlocking things might be too fast. Because Windows Hello has been out for forever.
Right. All right. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. Please vote in the poll at soundbites.org. Give us a call at 585-966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And we'll be right back with a whole lot more soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Jerry from Webster, New York on the line. Hi, Jerry. What's up? Jerry?
Usually, every so often, go into Zoom for meetings that I have, and I have it on my desktop. And recently, it's been pretty good. But yesterday, I tried that, and I couldn't get into them. They could see me and hear me, but I couldn't hear or see them on my screen. And it came up like a message for the camera and the microphone, but I couldn't seem to find where that problem was. I'm just wondering where the problem might be for that.
One of the issues that people are having with Zoom is that, well, in general these days, is that there are either multiple Zoom meetings without rebooting the system or multiple different types of meetings without rebooting the system. So, for example, I have a friend who does Zoom meetings and Microsoft Team meetings and Mastermind Lounge meetings. And whichever one he goes into first, is fine. But then when he tries to do either of the other two, the first one still owns the camera and the microphone and hasn't let them go. So he has to reboot before he can use the other system. And we see that more and more often. And that's not a function of the Zoom or Mastermind Lounge or Microsoft Teams software. That's a function of the computer, because other people, like, for example, I do all the same thing, but I do it on Linux, and it never has a problem.
Well, what I did was I got off the desktop that I had and borrowed someone's laptop and went into the email that they sent for the meeting. I get on, and that okay, sound and microphone and video.
Sure, yeah.
But on the desktop, I couldn't do that. I'm just wondering if my camera somehow got turned off. Or
no, it's
well,
it's,
well if it, you it were, could be. Because Zoom, along with a lot of the other video conferencing software, they have added new privacy options so that when you open the camera program, you get a prompt saying, can I use the camera? Can I use the microphone? And if you don't say yes, or if you accidentally say no, then it can't. So you have to go back into the Zoom preferences in order to turn on options to access the camera and microphone. You may even have to go into your system preferences, because I know on the Mac, that's a system level thing.
Right.
You have to say that Zoom is allowed to use the camera in the operating system.
Well, would somehow that have gotten turned off recently or something? Is that why it wouldn't come up, I wonder?
It could have, yes. There could have been an update. If you've updated Zoom, the new version may have to ask again, because now it's a different program.
Yeah, but Windows, it sounds like, is not letting go, and that's why you got to reboot. Because Windows is dumber than a rock, and that's why you were able to go on to the other system, because that had no reference of your go-to meeting, so and it was able to pull it up.
Right. It is clearly, because you were able to use it on another machine, it is clearly not Zoom, and it is clearly not the connection. It is your computer. So my suggestion is that if you had rebooted, it might have worked fine.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I'll try that next time.
Well, Windows has been notorious for that since back in Windows 7. They had, you know, we used to call brain farts in Windows, because they would sit there and get a hold of a program and then not let go of it.
Right.
And you'd sit there and say, but I canceled it. I canceled it. And Windows said, nope, it's still running in the applications, and you had to do a reboot.
And you can also go into the Zoom preferences, and there's a test your camera function to make sure the camera is accessible.
And the other thing is that Windows also runs some auxiliary programs. And every once in a while, those just simply don't stop when you end Zoom.
Right.
So when you start it again, those programs own the camera and microphone, and you can't use them until you reboot.
Yep.
Okay. Just out of curiosity, where would I find my camera setting and my microphone setting on my settings here? I'm just, if I have to do something with that.
Usually when you bring up your, say, GoToMeeting or whatever, and you get your camera plugged in, it'll give you a chance to test out both your camera and microphone settings before you go live.
Yeah, it's in one of the menus. There'll be a settings or an options or preferences.
Yeah, usually on the right-hand side.
So you want to look in Zoom for those preferences. But I understand, it sounds to me like you're very reluctant to simply reboot your computer. But I bet that'll solve the problem.
Yep.
On the other hand, if you don't want to reboot, then if you go into Zoom settings and search for camera, you'll find it. Or if you go into the Windows settings and search for camera, you'll find it.
Okay.
But often, until you reboot, those little auxiliary programs that run will continue to run.
Still got a hold of them.
And will keep hold of your audio video stuff, and you will not be able to use it until you reboot.
If I go into those Windows settings, where would I find camera? Would it be a separate?
Again, you would search camera, in the settings for camera.
Another way around. You go to the camera app, and then in the camera app, you go to settings.
Oh.
In Windows.
Okay. You can do it
that
way.
I'll try that then.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. I'll see if that works. Okay.
Okay.
Good luck. Yeah, the first thing you want to do is reboot, because it's not just Zoom. Many of them have that secondary program that does not stop, and therefore continues to own the camera.
Yep.
You know, audio. You've probably experienced, you're listening to music or watching a YouTube or whatever, and your email says you've got mail or whatever.
So you hear audio from two different programs.
Right. That'll work fine. But video generally doesn't. It doesn't allow you to use the same video source for two programs simultaneously. Right. And so, and often if you're doing, many programs use the audio the same way they do the video through those little auxiliary programs that own the channel until you let them go. So until you reboot, you will have that program.
Because Windows does we've said it for years, Windows does a very sloppy job of releasing stuff.
Yep. It always has.
Yep.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Roger from Greece, New York. Hi, Roger. What's up?
Hi there. I'm having a mail problem. I can send mail to a person, but they can't seem to get back to me. And I'm not quite sure why. It is, and there's any way, good way of checking. I've done everything, including sending notes of support, which I don't get any answer back.
All right, but, who's your mail provider?
One of them is Cisco or something like that. It's for a small business provider on a private network, and the other one is Verizon.
All right, so when you send an email.
Right.
They hit reply. Yes?
Yes, and I can reply to them. For some reason, they don't get my emails, either if I send it to them or if I reply to their email back. They still don't get it either way.
Do you get a bounce back message?
No.
Okay.
And have they checked their spam folder to make sure your mail's not going there?
Yes.
We've seen the issue with both Google and Apple that they have a spam filter at their end before it gets to your computer.
My guess.
And you have to log into the webmail to check the other spam folder.
Okay. Because my guess is that they think that I'm spam. That's my guess.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. But let me think about this. So if you send them mail, they don't get it.
Right.
If they send you mail, you get it.
Sometimes. Sometimes it has trouble getting through. Sometimes it doesn't go through. Sometimes it does, but it's periodic.
And then if you hit reply, they still don't get it.
They don't get it.
That sounds like a spam filter.
Mm-hmm.
Issue, and you probably need to talk to the folks at Cisco, and then who's the other one? Verizon.
Verizon, yeah.
Verizon. I will tell you right now, Verizon Mail is so screwed up.
okay.
But Cisco is a pretty reputable company.
I was sitting here with a phone on Verizon. I could send it. It could send to me, but I couldn't get to the other person on Verizon.
Yeah.
And I don't quite understand it. Is there any kind of as I remember years ago, there was a way you could query the mail server to see if it's replying. Is there still a way out there to do that?
Yes. Yes, but you need to do it from a command line. It's right. Much easier to do it in Linux than it is to do it in.
I'll take it, no matter where it is.
Yeah. But the I don't have that information in my head. I'm sorry, it's not something I do very often.
I know.
Are they on what operating system are you using?
They're on Windows 10.
Okay, so the Apple Mail program has a connection doctor built in where you can watch the Unix commands go back and forth.
Oh, I wonder if I set up because I could set my Apple phone to be on the. On my mail, that's not. I don't have it, but I could do set it up if that would solve my problem.
Well, you would at least be able to see the SMTP connection settings. and,
okay,
and
because
messages.
I think that's what it is. SMTP. I can't say it. Anyway, that one. I think that's probably where it is. The because I found a program out there because check hyphen mail or something like that, and it said that it was taking too long to respond. Oh.
There is a website called MX Toolbox, and they can check to see if your domains are on the blacklist. But you should be getting a bounce back message if the mail was blacklisted.
I'm not. But what was that called?
MX Toolbox, Mail Exchange Toolbox.
.com.
.com, yeah.
Okay, I try. Anything's worth a shot here. As I said, I've already sent notes to support without getting answered back, but that's not all that unusual either. So, okay.
Yeah, and we have a way to test the email client from Telnet, and Steve will post that link in just a couple of minutes.
Okay, that'd be nice.
Okie doke.
Thank you very, very much. It's been very helpful.
Thanks. Thank good
you.
Luck.
By the way, your information on the last guy is absolutely on the money. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Yeah, we, as I said.
And that's from Dell. That's an interesting place to find it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Dell does Linux now.
And they have a lot of servers.
They have a lot of servers.
I found a couple of them for how to find it on a Windows IIS server.
Yeah.
Okay, hold on.
But they have, Dell does Ubuntu and I think Red Hat now, I think. I could be wrong, but that's so unlikely. I mean,
I thought I was wrong once.
I thought I was wrong once. It turns out I wasn't. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
Yeah, hi. So I've got a question which unfortunately probably shows my age more than anything else. I just put an order in for an iPhone 13 mini, which should be here in a few days, I guess. But I've got a problem. With my old phone, I have forgotten both the passcode for the phone and the password for my iCloud account. I know the username, but I don't know. I've forgotten the password. So what can I do?
The password for the Apple ID, you can go to iforgot.apple.com and be able to reset that. Yep.
Really?
The password for the phone, you have to remember it, or you erase the phone and start over.
But before I erase it, I want to back up the phone and save the data, right?
Well, I don't know. Do you?
Yeah.
And if you do, then you have to remember the password.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's no way around that.
All the data on the phone is encrypted with that passcode, and you must have the passcode. Or you can buy a multi-million dollar hacking tool from that Israeli company.
Right, yeah, that'll do it.
Break into the phone.
But yeah.
We heard the FBI did that.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I wish there was an easier answer for that, but...
yeah, that's kind of the point of the encryption, is no one can get it without the passcode.
Yep.
So you better remember the passcode.
I could certainly upload my pictures to a Google site or something and save the pictures.
Right? Yep.
Not without having the passcode.
Can you get into the phone?
Oh, yeah. The phone works. It's fine.
Well, then what phone... I thought you couldn't remember the phone passcode.
No, I mean, my phone... I've never had to put a passcode into my phone. I never have to do that.
You should. Turn it on? To stop other people from getting into your phone.
Well, but the point is, it doesn't.
Okay. So which passcode... What was the other passcode you said you forgot?
iCloud.
Right. That was one. What was the other one?
Just the phone. The phone itself.
The phone itself has...
But he said he didn't put one in.
But if the phone doesn't have a passcode, then...
Well, the only other passcode he might have in his phone is his iCloud ID.
Right.
That's right.
So there's
right.
The iPhone has its own passcode, and then your Apple ID has its own passcode.
Okay, so you're telling me if my phone isn't requesting a passcode to get into it, then I never put it in. So my memory is worse than I even thought. I never put a passcode.
Well, worse than that, you specifically told it you didn't want to have a passcode because it tries to go out of its way to make you have a passcode.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, again, I don't remember what I did when I first got this phone. So.
Right. But what it sounds like is the only one you're missing is for your Apple ID, and that you can get at iforgotmypassword.apple.com.
Iforgot.apple.com.
Oh, just iforgot.apple.com.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. All right, hopefully I won't forget to thank you guys in the future when I...
Thanks, Tom.
We'll try to remind you.
Okay.
Later, Tom.
Thanks.
So what the I Forgot...
And Tom, before you, I'm sure you're still listening, get EnPass.
Well, it's the same thing. With Apple, you've got iCloud Keychain, and it stores all your passwords for you. But you have to remember your master password.
Yeah.
And so it's very, very tricky if you forget that password, because the point is you can't get into the data without the password. You don't want bad guys getting into your data. Right. You don't want bad guys being able to call Apple and say, hey, I'm Paul. I forgot my passcode. Can you give it to me? Which has happened.
Yes.
Yeah. And so it becomes, what is your recovery process? So when you set up your Apple ID, you put in your cell phone number and you put in your email address and you put in security questions. So it's going to ask you that stuff to prove that it's really you getting your password back. So if you ever change your phone number or change your email address, make sure you go to all of your services, Apple, Google, Amazon, whatever, put in your new stuff.
Yep.
So if you do forget your passcode, they're going to email that address you had 10 years ago that you don't use anymore.
Right.
And speaking of phones.
Are we?
What a perfect segue.
Yes.
All right. As I told you, I always get annoyed. You know, you go out in the world right now and everybody's just literally buried into their phone.
That's the truth.
And, you know, you can go out to dinner. Like I've said before, you know, people have heard me say, you know, there you could see a family of four, and all four stared down at their phone, playing with their phone.
Oh, they're chatting each other.
Well, yeah. I was at wife and I were at dinner just a couple days ago, and I found something that's more annoying.
Wow!
It's when here they are. This table was right in the middle of the restaurant. This lady pulls out her phone, answers hello. She sets it down.
Oh my! Yeah.
And puts it on speaker.
Yep.
The whole restaurant got to hear about her daughter and her, and then going to the doctors and the whole doctor experience.
Well, I was like joining in on that conversation.
Uh-huh.
And then they glare at you. This is a private conversation.
No,
it's not.
It's not private at all.
Oh, I was looking around. I just find it so entertaining watching the other people's faces.
You know, they make a cream for that now.
Yeah.
As this idiot is having this private conversation on speakerphone in the middle of a restaurant. Hello.
Yep. Oh, and I, speaking of phones.
Yep. Another segue.
I got my Pixel 5A with 5G.
That's 5A.
With 5G. 5A with 5G. I don't know where 5B, C, D, E, and F are.
So that's 10-something, isn't it?
Yeah, it says 10-something. 10-ag, I guess. I just got that. It was sitting on the porch when I left the house this morning, so I've got it now. And then at some point this week, I'll have to go to the phone store and get them to move everything.
He's resisted the temptation of opening the box. He just opened the outer box.
Yeah.
He didn't even try to install it and everything else, move the chips around and all. Of course, that does take some time.
Well, yeah, wouldn't it be embarrassing if you couldn't transfer your data?
Yes. Well, I can transfer the data easily enough, but what I can't do is change the... this has either an eSIM, electronic SIM.
You can't just change the SIM card. You need a 5G capable SIM.
Right. And and also the old phone has a micro SIM in this or a SIM, and this is a micro SIM
or nano SIM.
One of the. The new one is smaller than the old one.
It's your fault for keeping your phone for so long.
That's my fault entirely. It's exactly right. She got a new phone every 3 months, like the rest of the world. That's exactly right. But I've got that, and I was very happy it came today. It was supposed to be delivered yesterday, but it spent a day stuck in Lothlorien, Illinois. I don't know why.
I like it now with the new phones now that, you know, back in the day when we first got it, you had to re-enter all your old phone numbers and all. Well, now, because I just did it to my wife's phone, she wound up with an old Samsung phone, and her son got her a new one for her birthday. And I was able just to hook the cable up. It not only moved all her contacts and emails and all that, all the other apps that she had on her phone, boom, just come right on over.
It's a little tricky if you're going from like Samsung Android to Motorola Android.
Right.
But if you're going iPhone to iPhone or plain Android to plain Android, it's a lot easier.
Pixel to Pixel for me. So,
yeah.
So yep. It should be pretty easy. The old phone, I took it to Verizon. They said, oh, well, just hook up these two things. I said, no, you don't understand. The old phone will not hold a charge. So I need that connector to keep it plugged in. So I couldn't move everything. But luckily, everything was already, it was Google, so it was already in the cloud, and it just all came back down anyway. I didn't lose anything, but, you know, I'll get them to do it, because what will happen is I will get this phone, and my wife will get my phone, and so that'll be nice.
And you have someone to blame when it doesn't work.
That's exactly right. Well, the other part of the problem is I have sausage fingers and arthritis.
Yeah.
So moving those tiny little Sims around, even if it was the same size, mm-hmm. I can't do that anyway. That's just not happening for me anymore. I haven't. It's been decades since I could wire up the end of an RJ45 jack. I just don't have the manual dexterity anymore. So I'm perfectly happy to let someone else do it, and if they're perfectly happy to do it, then everybody wins.
Yeah, I mean, why not? You know, and they do it day in, day out.
That's
so
exactly right.
Why have to fumble through, you know, well, should I do this or that? Or if it's something's taking, because, you know, the timing in that. Because it takes a little time for it to move everything over.
And the other thing is, the last time I did this, you know, if it was me, I'd have to read the directions over a couple of times, make sure I had it right.
Yep.
This lady just went, oh, another one of these, basically.
Yeah.
Boom, 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 boom. And 2 minutes later, she was done. So, excellent.
Yeah, I've seen it where they've set it down and go work with another customer because it's going to take, you know, a good 20 minutes or so for him to switch the data and that around, and they can be helping somebody else and get them out the door.
Right.
So, yeah, that's no biggie.
So, I'm looking forward to that. I have a new phone. I'm very excited. We'll see if I love
it. Well, that's the one thing I'm still waiting for, you know, because I have, you know, the protective glass.
Yeah.
But mine, it cracked, the glass part, protector part. And supposedly, you know, because I called the company, and it's guaranteed for life.
Right.
And they were supposed to send me a new replacement in 6 weeks, and it's been a little more than 6 weeks now.
Well, that's life these days. Maybe it's stuck in Lothlorien, Illinois.
Yeah, that's what I fear. It could be, you know, anywhere. It's on a cargo ship still bopping around on the ocean there, because that's where a lot of stuff is stuck right now.
That's exactly right.
Because very little is made here in the U.S.
Right.
It's all coming from overseas, and right now with the ports and everything else, it's kind of tied up, so that's why I haven't gotten too
anxious.
And
even some of the stuff made in the U.S., the truck drivers have been sequestered for so long that there's not enough truck drivers anymore either.
Yeah, there's the very facile, you know, if it was made in the USA, it wouldn't be on a port. Right, it'd be stuck somewhere else because we don't have truck drivers either. So,
That's why it's going to be interesting this holiday season in ordering stuff.
Well, that's why you buy locally. You go to a local artisan shop and buy from a local maker, and then you get stuff today. You support local business. It's all better.
Yeah. I think this whole you better buy early now because there's a problem shipping is just a scam by the industry to get you to buy more stuff now and more stuff later.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. All right, that's it. We are done. For another week. It hardly seems possible. We only started 2 hours ago. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank all of you for calling in. Again, let me go back and thank all of those of you who were kind and generous enough to become members, update your membership, renew your membership to this station so we can stay on the air for another 6 months. We very much appreciate that. But we are done for another week, and we're gone. This is Jazz 90.1. This is Soundbites, and we will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District.